Mother Speak podcast presents a must-listen-to show from Amy Goodman and Democracy Now!, aired on January 14, 2009. It features Avi Shlaim of Oxford University on the background to the ongoing bombardment of Gaza. It is 18 minutes.
We're here on Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. Our guest right now is Oxford University professor Avi Shlaim. He teaches international relations at Oxford University. He's speaking to us from Oxford right now, leading authority in the world on the Arab-Israeli conflict. We've had a number of debates here on Democracy Now!, Professor Shlaim, over the past weeks about what's happening in Gaza. And those who support the Israeli military continually say that in 2005, 3 years ago, Israel pulled out of Gaza entirely. You have a different picture of what happened under Ariel Sharon in August of 2005. Explain how you see the withdrawal of Israeli military at that time.
President Bush described Ariel Sharon as a man of peace. I've done a great deal of archival research on the Arab-Israeli conflict, and I can honestly tell you that I have never come across a single scintilla of evidence to support the view of Ariel Sharon as a man of peace. He was a man of war, a champion of violent solutions, a man who rejected totally any Palestinian right to self-determination. He was a proponent of Greater Israel, and it is in this context that I see his decision to withdraw unilaterally from Gaza in August of 2005. The withdrawal was officially called the unilateral Israeli disengagement from Gaza. I would like to underline the word unilateral. Ariel Sharon was the unilateralist par excellence. The reason he decided to withdraw from Gaza was not out of any concern for the welfare of the people of Gaza or any sympathy for the Palestinians and their national aspirations, but because of the pressure exerted by Hamas, by the Islamic resistance to the Israeli occupation of Gaza. In the end, Israel couldn't sustain the political, diplomatic, and psychological cost of maintaining its occupation in Gaza. And let me add in parenthesis that Gaza was a classic example of exploitation, of colonial exploitation in the post-colonial era. Gaza is a tiny strip of land with about 1.5 million Arabs, most of them, half of them, refugees. It's the most crowded piece of land on God's earth. There were 8,000 Israeli settlers in Gaza, yet the 8,000 settlers controlled 25% of the territory, 40% of the arable land, and the largest share of the desperately scarce water resources. Ariel Sharon decided to withdraw from Gaza unilaterally, not as a contribution, as he claimed, to a two-state solution. The withdrawal from Gaza took place in the context of unilateral Israeli action in what was seen as Israeli national interests. There were no negotiations with the Palestinian Authority on an overall settlement. The withdrawal from Gaza was not a prelude to further withdrawals from the other occupied territories, but a prelude to further expansion, a further consolidation of Israel's control over the West Bank. In the year after the withdrawal from Gaza, 12,000 new settlers went to live on the West Bank. So I see the withdrawal from Gaza in the summer of 2005 as part of a unilateral Israeli attempt to redraw the borders of Greater Israel and to shun any negotiations and compromise with the Palestinian Authority.
Professor Avi Shlaim, Israel says the reason it has attacked Gaza is because of the rocket fire, the rockets that Hamas is firing into the southern Israel.
This is Israeli propaganda, and it is a pack of lies. The important thing to remember is that there was a ceasefire brokered by Egypt in July of last year, and that ceasefire succeeded. So if Israel wanted to protect its citizens, and it had every right to protect its citizens, the way to go about it was not by launching this vicious military offensive, but by observing the ceasefire. Now, let me give you some figures which I think are the most crucial figures in understanding this conflict. Before the ceasefire came into effect in July of 2008, the monthly number of rockets fired, Qassam rockets, homemade Qassam rockets fired from the Gaza Strip on Israeli settlements and towns in southern Israel was 179. In the first 4 months of the ceasefire, the number dropped dramatically to three rockets a month, almost zero. I would like to repeat these figures for the benefit of your listeners. Pre-ceasefire, 179 rockets were fired on Israel. Post-ceasefire, three rockets a month. This is point number one, and it's crucial. And my figures are beyond dispute because they come from the website of the Israeli Foreign Ministry. But after initiating this war, this particular table, neat table, which showed the success of the ceasefire, was withdrawn and replaced with another table of statistics, which is much more obscure and confusing. Israel, the Foreign Ministry, withdrew these figures because it didn't suit the new story. The new story said that Hamas broke the ceasefire. This is a lie. Hamas observed the ceasefire as best as it could and enforced it very effectively. The ceasefire was a stunning success for the first 4 months. It was broken not by Hamas, but by the IDF. It was broken by the IDF on the 4th of November when it launched a raid into Gaza and killed six Hamas men. And there is one other point that I would like to make about the ceasefire. Ever since the election of Hamas in ever since Hamas captured power in Gaza in the summer of 2007, Israel had imposed a blockade of the Strip. Israel stopped food, fuel, and medical supplies from reaching the Gaza Strip. One of the terms of the ceasefire was that Israel would lift the blockade of Gaza, yet Israel failed to lift the blockade, and that is one issue that is also overlooked or ignored by official Israeli spokesmen. So Israel was doubly guilty of sabotaging the ceasefire, A, by launching a military attack, and B, by maintaining its very cruel siege of the people of Gaza.
Israel calls Hamas terrorist. What is your definition of terror?
My definition of terror is the use of violence against civilians for political purposes. And by this definition, Hamas is a terrorist organization, but by the same token, Israel is practicing state terror because it is using violence on a massive scale against Palestinian civilians for political purposes. I don't hold a brief for Hamas. Hamas is not a paragon of virtue. Its leaders are not angels. They harm civilians indiscriminately. Killing civilians is wrong, period. That applies to Hamas, and it applies equally to the state of Israel. But there are two points I would like to make about Hamas. And that is, the first point is that it was elected in a fair and free election in January 2006. It was an impeccable election monitored by a number of international observers, including President Jimmy Carter. So it is not just a terrorist organization, it is a democratically elected government of the Palestinian people and the representative of the Palestinian people in Gaza as well as the West Bank. And the second point that I would like to make is that since coming to power, Gaza has moderated its political program. Its charter is extreme. Its charter denies the legitimacy of a Jewish state. Its charter calls for an Islamic state over the whole of historic Palestine. The charter has not been revised, but since coming to power, the leadership of Hamas has been much more pragmatic and stated that it is willing to negotiate a long-term ceasefire with the state of Israel for 20, 30, 40, maybe even 50 years. Thirdly, Hamas joined with Fatah, the rival group, the mainstream group on the West Bank, in a national unity government in the summer of 2007. That national unity government lasted only 3 months. Israel, with American support, helped to sabotage and to bring down that national unity government. Israel refused to deal with a Palestinian government which included Hamas in it. And shamefully, both the United States and the European Union joined in Israel in this refusal to recognize a Hamas-dominated government. And with Israel withdrew tax revenues, and European Union withdrew foreign aid in a shameful attempt to bring down a democratically elected government. So I do not defend Hamas, but I think that it hasn't received a fair hearing from the international community, and Israel has done everything to sabotage it all along.
Professor Schlaim, you say it's done everything to sabotage it, except at the beginning when you say it supported Hamas to weaken Fatah, which it now supports.
Indeed, Israel has always played the game of divide and rule. This is a very good tactic in times of war, to divide your enemies and pick them off one by one. No one can complain about that. But divide and rule isn't a good tactic in times of peace. If your aim is to achieve peace with the Arabs, then you should want unity among the Palestinians and unity in the Arab world. But Israel continued to play this game of divide and rule. Hamas emerged in the course of the first Intifada in the late 1980s. It is the Islamic resistance movement. The mainstream movement, Fatah, was led by Yasser Arafat, and Israel gave tacit encouragement and support to the Islamic resistance in the hope of weakening the secular nationalists led by Yasser Arafat. It was a dangerous game to play because the end result of this game was that Hamas emerged as the strongest Palestinian political party. And Israel helped Hamas inadvertently in another way, because Fatah signed a peace, the Oslo Accord with Israel in 1993. It expected the Oslo Accord to lead to a two-state solution. And yet Israel, after the election of Benjamin Netanyahu in 1996, reneged on the Israeli side of the deal. So the Oslo Accord, the Oslo peace process, wasn't doomed to failure from the start. It failed because Israel, under the leadership of the Likud, reneged on its side of the deal. So that left the Palestinians with nothing but misery and poverty and frustration and ever-growing Israeli settlements on the land. And it was this context that led to the success of Hamas at the last elections. So Israel has a lot to explain in the rise to power of the Hamas movement.
Professor Avi Shlaim, we only have a minute, but I want to ask you where you see the solution at this point. Barack Obama will be president on Tuesday in just a few days. Hillary Clinton will be Secretary of State.
The solution, this is a political conflict, and there is no military conflict there is no military solution to this conflict. The only solution lies in negotiations between Israel and Hamas about all the issues involved. President-elect Obama is a very impressive man and a very intelligent man and a very fair-minded man. He hasn't demonstrated any courage in the course of this crisis. He hasn't taken any position. He hasn't called for an immediate ceasefire. So the first step is an immediate ceasefire, and the next step would be negotiations between all the sides about restoring the ceasefire and then moving on to stage two, which is a political settlement to this tragic 100-year-old conflict.
And Hillary Clinton, as Secretary of State, who said in her confirmation hearing yesterday she would negotiate with Hamas.
Yes, but there are other signs from the Obama campaign that they would be willing to consider low-level indirect contacts with Hamas. And one has to be grateful for small mercies. So small, minor, low-level contacts with Hamas could lead to a proper dialogue in due course. So I remain optimistic that sanity and rationality would take over in American foreign policy after the dreadful last 8 years.
Professor Avi Shlaim, thank you very much for being with us. Professor Avi Shlaim, professor of international relations at Oxford University, served in the Israeli military. Among his books, Lion of Jordan, King Hussein's Life and War and Peace, known as one of the leading authorities in the world on the Israel-Palestine conflict and Arab-Israel conflict, among his other books, The Iron Wall. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report.